Hey everybody, I'm Kelly Jones, and you're listening to Pioneer Radio.
Let's talk about radio, because radio is so good.
I'm going to tell you something, Flacca, and I want you to listen tight.
Telling stories to regular folks is not a trivial thing.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Even if it's hard to explain, even if you know they don't really want to hear it, not really, I urge you to give it a try.
You have my undivided attention.
Take a chance, find the words, find the metaphor, share the beauty, tell them a story.
Today on Pioneer Radio, we bring you an exciting chapter from a battle that began late in the last decade. In one corner, we have me. 5'3", not a huge reach, bespectacled, a nerd. A person that not only works with books for a living, but who seeks out, purchases, and reads books for pleasure. And in the other corner, we have the e-reader. Amazon's Kindle, Barnes & Noble's Nook, Chapter's Kobo. Whatever your brand, I hate it. Why? It doesn't look like a book, it doesn't feel like a book, it doesn't smell like a book, and it doesn't even read like a book. I can't hold an e-reader and feel how much of a book I have read and how much I still have to go. I can't smell an e-reader and know how old and worn and loved the copy of the book that I'm reading might be. Underlining passages and writing in the margins is not comparable to electronically highlighting or copying and pasting to some abstract file somewhere. In short, the e-reader can't provide all of the physical pleasures that traditionally come along with reading. And yet, I'm worried that the e-reader will prove too convenient, too practical, and too technologically savvy. I'm worried that the e-reader will destroy the book as we know it. So, this week on Pioneer Radio, it's my Luddite attitude against the future of reading. In round one, I'll list 12 reasons why books are better than e-readers. And then I'll run over a Kindle with my car. Just kidding. In round two, I'll go head-to-head with a Kindle devotee who makes a case for peaceful coexistence between books and e-readers. In round three, we'll get some expert testimony on why the e-reader could be an invaluable learning tool. Who will win? Only time will tell. Stick with us.
It's going to be interspectacular, fantabulous. It'll blow your socks off. It's one of those things where machine versus man. Man versus woman. Woman versus your mother. It's instupituous.
Round one. A list of why books are better than e-readers. 1. Texture. 2. Musty old book smell. 3. Deckle edges. 4. Dog-eared pages. 5. The previous owner's name, chicken scratched, in faded blue ink on the inside front cover. And sometimes there's photos or notes or letters in there, too. 6. Giving and receiving, borrowing and lending. 7. Displaying personal libraries. 8. Pages that get stuck together by apple juice in kids' books made of cardboard. 9. Dust jackets. 10. Bookstores, your local hotspot for meeting people since before the inventors of Match.com were a twinkle in their mammy's eyes. 11. First edition snobbery. And last but not least, number 12, don't forget about magazines.
I could follow. I write the ending without any sorrow.
Round two. Why did you want one in the first place?
For the last 3 years or so, I've been going on different ebook sharing websites that are philosophy or theory related books. They just put them up online. There's a few of them out, and I've been collecting a bunch of ebooks that I didn't know if I would read or I had, but I wanted an e-copy of them, or they were too expensive. Some books are like over $100 and there's an e-copy out there for free. Mm-hmm. So I made a big document, but I was never really doing anything with them on the computer, and the Kindle allowed me to use these ebooks that I had been collecting.
This is Ryan Cron. He's a PhD student in philosophy at the University of Guelph, and he's been arguing against me in favor of the Kindle for a year or so now. For Ryan, the Kindle is lovable, first and foremost, because it's practical.
One of my favorite features is that it will read the text to you. It reads it out loud. So when I drive back from Toronto to Guelph, I put it on like a book and say play, and it's an audio book. And now you can get, so any book can become an audio book. So that's a great thing. Yeah. About it, especially for people that are blind, for example. That would be an amazing feature, even though it would be hard to navigate the home screen.
Right.
But once you get there, you'd be able to read any book, even if it hadn't been made into audiobook. And I often like listening to the book while I read it. Just like sometimes I like to read out loud while I'm reading, because it helps me stay with a certain pace. Mm-hmm. I'm a very slow reader, and sometimes I have a tendency to keep rereading sentences after one another. That's probably as a result of reading philosophy, where you have to keep rereading sentences. But having a computerized voice read them out for you, kind of, you don't want to keep pausing it all the time, so it keeps me on pace and I can get through an article a lot faster, or a book a lot faster as a result of that. So that's, I think, one of my favorite features about the Kindle, is that it has this computerized voice that is able to read out any text to you. It still has a lot of problems. For example, it says neurosciences, neurosciences, and words like that, that it just cannot understand. It reads out the page numbers, for example, in the middle of the text. So it'll say, and then he went 17 to the, that type of thing. So it has a lot of problems that they'll probably sort out.
Ryan is responsible for making the one claim that has almost changed my mind about the e-reader. He says that books and e-readers just shouldn't be compared in the first place. They are such completely different mediums, he says, that to claim that one is better and that the other is worse doesn't make sense, because they are both meant to do completely different things.
But it seems like, it just seems like a completely different reading experience.
Yeah, I...
That doesn't bother you?
No, it doesn't really bother me at all. Just, it is a completely different reading experience, and it's so unlike a book. And so I think that when you're comparing it to a book, books are always going to seem like they have a certain like feel-good aspect to them. You can mark them up, you can bend the pages, they have a certain smell, a bunch of these things that they look good on the shelf on like e-books. And you can create a curated collection of them that seems to matter, unlike... If you say, oh, I have all of Bruce Springsteen's CDs downloaded from the internet on MP3, well, that doesn't matter. But if you show them your vinyl collection or something, that seems to like kind of matter. It's a lifelong worth of collecting or whatever. Mm-hmm. But with So the Kindle obviously doesn't have that. So it is a completely different experience. But if you compare it to a book, it's always going to seem less good. I don't know if I see it as the same kind of medium. Just like I don't see watching a movie in a theater versus watching a movie on VHS versus watching a movie on Blu-ray as necessarily comparable things. Because then the theater is always going to be the best. The Blu-ray is going to be next. And there you're only basing it on like one type of thing. How clear is the picture? How big is the picture? How like... and so VHS, most people are getting rid of VHS. I have a bunch of like hundreds of VHS. I'm really a pluralist when it comes to media. But back to the Kindle, it's got kind of the opposite of that like hyper technological feel to it. But I think it's useful, and it's a totally different experience, but I don't see it as a necessarily bad one.
Because they're different mediums, Ryan says that the e-reader won't ever fully replace the book.
People will no longer only have books, or like some people might only have e-readers, some people might only have books, but I think more and more people are going to have a little bit of both.
Mm. Yeah. Why don't you think they'll replace books?
I think for a lot of people, like, books may definitely go down in sale, but I don't think they'll ever replace them just because you can't do the exact same thing with them. So the comparison to, say, MP3s and CDs or something, the physical aspect of the CD is only good to look at before you put the CD in. Once you put the CD in the player, the thing that you're getting sounds the exact same as a MP3 to most like people's ears. Whereas with a book, it's never going to look exactly like a book unless they make e-readers like feel like books, mm-hmm. and you can turn pages and stuff like that. Another thing is people still, like vinyl is still selling a lot, which means that people still, despite everyone buying songs on iTunes or downloading them for free or whatever, there's still a physical medium that is being sold. People still want the material thing, and so now they're no longer buying CDs, they're just going back to buying vinyl, which was all about the look of the thing. It had mm-hmm. a big artwork, and you can actually see it turn on your turntable, and has a much more material physical experience. And so, but vinyl still doesn't sell much, and it's kind of a niche market. So that this could happen with books, that I could see books becoming a niche market. It will kill off, I think, a bit of the book, but I don't think it will make the book extinct like the MP3 will make the CD extinct.
For Ryan, if publishers and book lovers want to keep their niche alive, they're going to have to get creative. And not just in the marketing department. Ryan says that form, just as much as content, will start to matter more and more because there is an aesthetic to books that the e-reader just can't capture. It seems like, instead of trying to keep up with new technology, authors and booksellers might want to really emphasize that books and e-readers are, as Ryan says, completely different mediums.
Like, they only overlap in some form, and that is they present the same content. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that content can change as a result of the form changing. Mm-hmm. And the form is completely different. I don't know if one is necessarily better as a whole than the other, but I do think that in certain circumstances, one is preferable to the other. It's kind of like the avant-garde in cinema. I just saw Adam Egoyan's 8.5 Screens, and that was a film where you'd go into the theater, sit at the front of the theater, and look back onto the audience. And on the audience, there was a bunch of screens laying over top of the chairs, and there was a projection that would put 8.5 different screens of Fellini's 8.5 onto the audience. This was a completely new, interesting cinematic experience for me. That cannot be duplicated in a DVD. I can't download the DVD version of 8.5 screens and have the same experience as going to that installation of avant-garde film. And it's still like a cinematic experience. It's not a new art form necessarily. It's still using the exact medium of cinema, projection and screen. Like, this might be one way to make money in the book industry now that the ebook has been introduced, and that is pay extra attention to style, to font, to the presentation of your book. So people say don't judge a book by its cover. Well, that might be the only thing anyone judges a book by in the future, because that's the only value a physical book has over an ebook, is its cover and its presentation and things like that. And that might become very important to people who want to have a particular book. Like, Criterion DVDs, for example, look so amazing. Their inserts are amazing. But I could download every Criterion movie online. But there's still something about their presentation that I still want to have those actual DVDs. I still want to have the Tashin art books on my coffee table and not on an e-reader. Yeah. Although for the average book that I just want to like skim through and it's not really personal to me, I just want to find a little bit of information out of it, or I just want to quickly read it, I might just go with an ebook for that one, because I don't care much about the form of the book, just the content. But if you care a lot about the form, it seems like that's where the book, the old school book, comes in.
Round 3. If Ryan's right, if the e-reader and the book provide different reading experiences, my next question is, which is better when they're both tested on the same task? In other words, which is the best platform for pleasure reading? The best platform for getting news and information? Which is the best platform for learning? For an answer to this last question, I turn to my mom.
Hello.
Hey, Mom.
My mom is...
I am Dr. Susan McAllen. I'm an assistant professor of education at Longwood University in Virginia.
Mom's seen and participated in a lot of research on e-reader use in classrooms, both in North America and abroad. There's a lot of data being gathered on the e-reader and sustainability, but Mom says...
But after all this data gathering, we, you know, came to the conclusion that really nobody looked at, is there a difference in teaching and learning when you use the digital reader? And, of course, because I'm an educator, it really became important to me to figure that out. Because, you know, supposedly students are coming to school and they're, you know, computer savvy and their brains are wired a little differently than, say, my generation's brain, who only had hard copy books. And so, you know, was this actually an advantage, or is it just another tool? And that really became my question, my research question. So what we did was we chose a freshman-level class, because when we were thinking about cost, freshman classes generally have fewer books than upper-level classes or graduate-level classes. So we chose a freshman-level human growth and development class, which I taught, and then a freshman-level human growth and development class, which a colleague of mine taught. I was the experimental classroom. My students did not buy a textbook. All they got was the Kindle, and we preloaded the text onto the Kindle. The control classroom used only the textbook. And we chose a textbook that no other human growth and development class had ever used before at our university. And we chose one that didn't have a lot of graphs and charts and bells and whistles. And the reason we did that was we felt that if it were more or less black and white, it would mirror what was on the Kindle. So we didn't look at the tool, the difference in tools, as a delimitation of the study. Mm.
So there's the project. You've got two classrooms with similar students and similar teaching styles. One's got a textbook, and one's got the textbook on Kindles.
The results were really surprising. We pre- and post-tested them on the content of the course. And the control classroom was initially maybe 1 or 2 points higher than the experimental classroom on the pretest. And they both of them were in the 40s, 46 and 48 or 46 and 47. I don't remember which. I don't have my papers in front of me, but I can find out the data if you need it. They were within 1 or 2 points of each other, but they were in the upper 40s content-wise. At the end of the semester, we post-tested both classes, and the experimental class gained 39 percentage points on the post-test. It was the exact same test. Mm-hmm. And the control class only gained 11 points.
Oh, my God.
I'm just going to play that for you again, because those numbers seem pretty astounding.
The experimental class gained 39 percentage points, and the control class only gained 11 points. We got some qualitative data from it, too, because once a week I would have the students journal. And I started out with a journal prompt that had to do with, you know, just using the Kindle in general. How do you feel about it? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Most of the students liked it. They liked the ease that it was easy to use. It wasn't difficult. A lot of them wanted a backlight. A lot of them wished they'd had the color. A lot of them loved the fact that they didn't have to carry around these really heavy textbooks, and so they wished all their books could be on the Kindle. But what I think makes the difference on the Kindle isn't that it makes you learn more, but that it focuses your learning. And there's something in internet literature called the grasshopper effect, and it's the idea that when you're reading an article or reading a chapter online or on an ebook, you have live URLs you can link to, these hyperlinks.
Right.
And so you'll be reading along and read one paragraph and two paragraphs, and understand that when you read, you're making meaning. You're bringing all your background knowledge to the text, and trying to take away meaning, not that the author necessarily intended you to understand, but what you understand based on your interaction with that text. So you're reading, and you make meaning from the first paragraph, and halfway through the second paragraph, there's a live URL. Well, you click on it, and then you start reading something else or looking at something else. Oh, and there's another URL. Whoops, you're going to click on that one too. 10 minutes, 20 minutes later, you're going to jump back to your original text. How much of what you meaning you made do you understand? You know, what portion of that meaning is still there with you? Or is it, oh my gosh, I have to start all over again? Student, and I was very surprised at this, but students time and again attest to the fact that when they used the Kindle, they didn't have these live URLs. They had to focus what was on that screen.
Mm-hmm.
And they really appreciated the fact that there weren't graphs and charts or live URLs or something distracting them on the page or small text at the bottom or footnotes or something that they thought, oh, the teacher's going to test me on the footnote because they're tricky and they want to see if I read this. They were actually focusing on the text they knew was important.
I press my mom on this issue because it's not just focus that matters when you're reading, whether you're in an academic setting or not. The entire experience matters, from the temperature of the room to the feel of the pages, or the look of the screen, I suppose. So I wanted to know a bit more about how the reading experience has changed, for the better, it seems, when you're learning off a Kindle.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe I'd be interested to try a Kindle in an academic setting just because this idea that it's not supposed to be compared to a book is brand new to me. I have a hard time wrapping my head around that because the activity that's happening seems to be the same, you know, you're reading. When I read, I need the book in my hands and I need the texture of the book and to know how far through it I am, not in terms of percentages or numbers, but because the left side's more heavy.
That's funny. Well, one of the great things about the Kindle is you can do clippings. You know, you can actually clip portions of the book, and they all go to a file, and then you can search the clippings. So it's like note-taking, but you don't have the pen and paper, and you don't have the sticky notes or the little tags. That would bothersome to some students.
The thing that I would be interested to know is that the parts of the brain that are engaged when you write something down in your own handwriting versus the parts of the brain that are engaged when you're cutting and pasting in this sort of abstract space, and like whether one of them helps, you know, left brain people or right brain people or whatever kind of brained people we are remember more or less.
Well, some people are kinesthetic learners and they need that feel. They need that highlight. They need to do it. I'm not sure that we've connected those multiple intelligences with parts of the brain yet.
I would also wonder if those kinesthetic learners are disappearing now that technology is so prevalent. Maybe those kids are, you know, we're not seeing them as much, or we're seeing them in, you know, ADHD settings or something. It's like, this kid needs to use its body. It must be, you know, deficient in some way, whereas these kids can sort of sit quietly and focus with their Kindle.
Yeah, that's a hard one to pull out of there. Although I know I have seen PET scans of the brain, and you know, you'll have two students sitting side by side, and say they're playing a Nintendo game. Well, the student who's the expert's brain is not engaged. There's not a lot of firing of the neurons, and the pathways aren't charged up because the paths have already been formed. The networks are already formed, and they're very efficient. The student who sits there and is struggling is the one who's actually where learning is taking place, because those networks are firing and refiring, and they're repeating, and they're going here, and they're jumping around to try to make efficient networks to do whatever task is on that screen. And so, you know, your job as an educator is to find ways to engage students and to keep those neurons firing. And I'm not sure, with a digital reader or with an iPad, I'm not sure how much firing is going on. I mean, once you've hit the screen or slid across or done this or done that multiple times, you're just actually hitting the screen over and over again. You're not learning anything new. Unless you actually stop and read and engage with the text. I don't know. It's an intriguing question, and I think we're not there yet. We just don't know. We don't know. And people need to find out. They need to know, because we need to be able to plan. I mean, I'm teaching, when freshmen come to college and they come to me, I'm getting them ready for jobs that probably don't exist yet. And when you think about that, and when you think about, you know, children, because ultimately my training teachers affects more children than it could if I were still in the regular classroom teaching. You want those children to be as best prepared they can to lead the world, you know, to be good citizens, to problem solve. You know, when I'm in the nursing home, I want someone who can problem solve, not someone who has to pick up the book and go, step one, is she choking? Step two, if her breathing is impaired, do this. Oh, let me put the book down and do that. Oh, that didn't work. Step three, you know. And I'm afraid that, you know, by having so much information and it going so quickly by people, that they're not stopping to read. And that's why I liked the results that we got that said the Kindle focused them and made them look.
The book of love is long and boring. No one can lift the damn thing.
You've been listening to Pioneer Radio on CFRU 93.3 in Guelph. That's our show. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
But I